Thank you for writing in. I want to be super clear. Like, we really appreciate this. Anybody who's listening, who's thinking, I want to write in, go ahead. I'll be fine.
Yeah, it gives
especially
us
especially if it's nice stuff.
Yeah, it gives us a fresh look at some of the stuff, and also some of the stuff we just talked about there is a great review, which we might not have done if it weren't for people writing in. Welcome back.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Back to the land of the living, as it were.
Back from the brink of death.
That's the way it felt. I'll tell you what. What a cold.
Gotta watch out for those colds these days. Now that I'm pushing 40, the next cold could be the one.
That could be. The next one could be the last one.
Exactly. You gotta live these podcast episodes like they might be your last.
Yeah, I hear that.
Well, that was macabre.
You know that saying, memento mori, you got to start every morning by remembering.
Exactly. So we're doing a mailbag.
Yeah, mailbag. We need a jingle. We haven't developed like a jingle and graphic yet for the, you know, mailbag. Mailbag.
I like that. I think we should just box that up.
Okay, we'll just capture exactly what I just did.
We'll auto-tune it. Yeah, we'll auto-tune it and it'll be the thing.
Okay, perfect.
But more seriously, though, or in all seriousness, people write to the show. They say stuff.
We like that.
And so we like the stuff. Nice. We like when people say nice things.
That's right. That's true. Sometimes people write to the show and don't say very nice things. Maybe we could do without that. I don't know.
Or they grossly misinterpret things.
There's probably some things to be said for like a resilient mindset and like an openness to criticism. But sometimes I feel like, no, I'd rather not need those things. I'd rather just only hear nice things.
Yes, exactly. Oh, well, let's get down to it, Jim. What's the first one in the mailbag?
Well, this one comes from an educator who runs a school pipe band. And they said, Andrew and Jim, hey, what if you have a tiny young piper with little arms and they are already on the smallest bag available? How can we help them to keep their forearm in that good posture to be unimpinged, right? I think is the word that we've used before. Any advice? Much appreciated.
Yes.
What do you think, Andrew? How do we help the tiny and young pipers amongst us?
It would be similar to other things. It would be similar to other things in life. I don't know if you've ever seen little kids try to play basketball, right?
Mm-hmm. It's like, I've coached them. It's adorable.
Yeah, the ball is like too big. And you
can
give them
dribble, it only travels its own size in distance.
Yeah.
When they try to dribble, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So you can take down the size of the ball a little bit. That'll help, so on and so forth. But really, when you have a really little kid, usually you just kind of give them something and then you just kind of let them run around and have fun with it. I feel like it's the same sort of thing with bagpipe posture. If you have a very small child that's learning, my guess is that their forearm is probably going to be impinged a little bit as they get things going. And the pipes are probably going to be too heavy for them at first and stuff. But the kids are going to grow and they are going to get bigger. And so we'll reinforce some of those posture points along the way. But I would think if you have the smallest bag and you've done the best you can, so, you know, now we're at the point where we just kind of chuck them in the deep end and then the posture issues will tend to sort themselves out as they play a little bit more. You know what I mean? That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. You hope for a soon and fast growth spurt and just keep on trucking. Is that kind
of it? Yep. I will say that it's very rare. It's very rare to teach a piper that's really actually too small to do anything. I think it's pretty common that they're too small to like perfectly present amazing bagpipe posture, but it's pretty uncommon that they won't be able to do anything. I remember when I first started, I was on like the goose and we just corked up all the stocks and we put a chanter in there with an easy read. And I think I just kind of horsed around with it, and you'll sort of lead your own development from there. But I guess my point, Jim, is perfect posture is not going to make a huge difference in those early stages. You know, it'll kind of start to come out in the wash later. That's how I'd respond to that. Just do the best you can and it's going to work out just fine. Just the same with basketball, right? Like, right now, if my kid wanted to shoot a normal size basketball at a 10-foot regulation height hoop, he can't even really get the ball to the rim yet.
Yeah.
So we can kind of do this and that and the other thing. By the way, even if they could, they wouldn't really be able to play basketball that great yet because they're just kids and they're just learning. And it's mostly just about running around and having fun at this point. And the same will be true with the pipes too, I'm thinking.
Beautiful. Okay.
That's all I got.
We got another message in. Listener says, here's a question that I have about progression of a tune.
Yes.
In a previous episode, you talked about how practice should go and that was helpful. But how do you take a tune from the beginning stage to having it well polished? They go on to say, some tunes seem easy on the chanter, but when you transition them to the pipes, it's a different story.
Yes.
Slow air tunes seem to be easy, but Scotland the Brave is a struggle. I'm sure repetition, starting slow, speeding up over time, is probably the answer, but it could be helpful, any advice you have to give. Yeah, he says, anything, like, should I dip back into different kinds of practice to move that needle, et cetera? Thank you.
Yeah.
What do you think? Is it, first of all, does that not sound very relatable? I mean, that's not even, I feel like this person's talking about Scotland the Brave, maybe they're toward the beginning stage, but like, I'm trying to learn like a Fred Morrison tune right now, and I can feel pretty good about it on the practice chanter, get on the pipes, and it's like I've never played it before. So that sure sounds familiar to me.
Sure. But first of all, I'd like to go back and thank the first person who submitted the question for the mailbag, because that kind of allowed us to get a little bit warmed up, because now this question just puts us right into the deep end. You know what I mean? This is one of the big questions. It's like, where does existence come from?
Could we tackle that one next?
Yeah. I mean, not this episode because we're doing a mailbag, but anyway, so this is a big question, okay? And there's a couple of clues in the question itself. For example, the person says that when I play the slow tunes, it's not so bad. And then when I play Scotland the Brave, it's like really hard. So what's the difference between the slow tunes and Scotland the Brave? Like, Jim, why don't you conjecture for us on behalf of the submitter of the question?
I will conjecture by using the tool that I often rely on, which is embarrassing my children in the future if they ever happen to hear this.
Okay.
Just last night, I was working on a tune with my second son on the piano and pointing out to him that there are parts of this song that have dotted quarter notes and other parts that have a bunch of eighth notes. So there are these parts that go faster, and then there's parts where his hands almost get to rest, and that during those slower parts, it's the same tempo, right? But those parts where his hands are doing something that's not quite as fast, that's when he can think about what's coming up next in those more involved parts of the tune. And I suspect that something similar is happening, where when you're playing your pipes, you have limited bandwidth as to what you can focus on.
There it
is. So with a slower tune, you can think about what's coming next. You can think about your posture, your bag pressure, all these things. You can think about them more.
Maybe.
But when the tune is going faster, you got to focus on those fingers even more and keeping that rhythm straight, and that might make everything fall apart in a way.
Yep, for sure. I'm glad you arrived to the word bandwidth. That's the word I would use for this. Our brain has a certain amount of processing power, right? You just think of it like a computer. I know it's like probably different from computers in certain ways, but you can think of your brain as a computer, right? And then there's only so many programs you can run on a computer, right? If you want to run more programs on a computer, your processing speed either has to be a lot better, or you have to have a lot more like random access memory or something like that, right? Or maybe some of the programs have to be hard coded onto the actual chip or something like that. But anyway, my point is, if you think about it like a computer, the more stuff that you ask the computer to do, the more bogged down it gets, the slower it gets, and it might even crash if you do too much wild and crazy stuff on it. We all know this about our computers, but our brains are basically the same way. So the reason that transferring a tune from your practice chanter to your pipes is so difficult is because we're suddenly taking this first set of programs. And remember, playing a tune is not just one program. You've got like grace notes and you've got melody notes, and you want to avoid those crossing noises. You probably want the rhythm to sound pretty good. And maybe you're even trying to get it up to tempo, so you're trying to do it pretty quickly. I don't know. Maybe there's expression there that you're tutor is trying to work on you with, and don't forget about all the embellishments that maybe you're going to have to play. I mean, so we're already running a bunch of programs, and given your current ability level, let's say, or your current processing speed or whatever, maybe you can get Scotland the Brave sounding pretty okay in that environment. But now we're going to open up a whole bunch more programs at the same time. We've got blowing, we've got squeezing, we've got trying to make all that stuff steady, we've got the tuning. I mean, but basically just the operation of the pipes itself is quite tricky and involves a lot of practicing of coordination between basically the blowing and the squeezing and keeping that steady. Hopefully also thinking a little bit about keeping that at the sweet spot, right? So you can see how our program was maybe fairly operational before, but now that we added in a bunch more programs going on our brain computer thing, It's probably overloaded and you might even crash the system where mm-hmm. you can't even keep the pipes going. Or maybe you can keep the pipes going, but Scott and the Brave is just a complete hot mess and you can't get through it without a mistake. And that's because the way I look at it is we've overloaded the system with too many variables. Maybe variables isn't the right word. We've overloaded the system by asking it to do too much.
Cool. All at the same time.
Yeah. And so I think, all right, and the way that we structure the way that we approach things here, I think that what we need to do is we need to break down the art of bagpiping into different components. And slowly but surely over time, we need to hard code these fundamentals, right, into our hardware so that each of these important fundamentals don't take a lot of bandwidth in order to execute. We want, mm-hmm. for example, we want the production of the rhythm in Scott and the Brave to be autopilot. We don't have to worry about
yeah.
it. Or we don't have to worry about how to do it so much, right? And then same thing goes with going from note to note. Same thing goes with playing grace notes. Same thing goes with operating the instrument, right? That coordination between blowing and squeezing and getting that to come out smoothly, at first, that's going to take tons of bandwidth. Just like you might remember riding a bike at first took tons of bandwidth and didn't always work at first. And then eventually things start to click. And then you might be at the point, if you ride your bike often, where now you can carry on a conversation. Maybe you can even eat an ice cream cone all at the same time while you ride your bike, maybe even in traffic, something like that, right? All of these little skills, we break them down, we work on them, we get them to that autopilot stage. And then the dream world, right? I think what you're looking at when you see Stuart Little play Thunderstruck or something like that, I think what you're looking at is all of those components. I estimate there's about 10 of them, but all of those components are on autopilot. And so now the master player can allocate all of their bandwidth to just playing really cool stuff. And none of it to trying to get the technical aspects of it to come through cleanly. This person who wrote in, don't worry. The good news is you're not alone. Everybody has to go through this. We have to go through the problem of too much stuff to handle at one time. When it comes to transferring Scott and the Brave to the pipes, are there ways that you can simplify this so you're not asking yourself to do quite so much? That would be a question to think about, right? Can we simplify things a little bit to make the process of transitioning our tune to the bagpipes a little bit easier? For example, are we playing Scott and the Brave fully embellished with all of its complexity on the pipes? Is that what this person is doing? Or have they been wise enough to realize, wait, maybe if I played a simplified version of Scott and the Brave on the pipes, that would decrease the bandwidth a little bit and help me bridge the gap? What about the drones? Are we playing all the drones? Are we playing none of the drones? Have we simplified the instrument? Is the instrument maintained well? Are we shooting ourselves in the foot before we begin because our reed is too hard maybe, or the pipes aren't quite holding air, et cetera, et cetera? So we can also check these things. But yeah, bridging that gap, it's going to be pretty tricky. We talked about that in quite a lot of depth when we were discussing finding bagpipe freedom phase 4. Remember, Jim?
Yeah.
It's like just a lot of stuff in there. So anyway, you're not alone, Mr. or Mrs. Mailbag, who sent that in. And that's, of course, the big deal. For me, I feel like I have the operation of my bagpipe. It's so ingrained. I've played bagpipes for over 30 years now, Jim. Most of those 30 years at a pretty high level. Within 3 or 4 years, I was playing solos at a pretty high level. So anyway, that's 30 years of operating that instrument more or less on autopilot. So I don't really have to think about blowing it up and keeping it at least fairly steady. I'm always working on perfecting it, but the basics, I don't think about it. So that makes it really easy for me to take a tune and just chuck it up on the pipes because those bagpipe skills are on autopilot. But that doesn't come out of thin air. That you have to learn that. Mm-hmm. And the process is rife with challenges and probably feelings of frustration.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Yeah, well, like I say, I can definitely relate to this. And feel free to correct me if this is incorrect, Andrew. But thinking about your Stuart Little example, for example, there, and the listener here wrote about Scotland the Brave, I think it's interesting that to me, what I think of is like, how much can I get my blowing and my bag transition within the arm? A lot of these, basically everything except for finger work, how much can I get that to become like a background task that runs smoothly so that then I can focus on finger work? That's where I'm at personally. That's not to say that I'm a steady blower. That it's not, because what I'm trying to get at is that, like, bring up a point that I hadn't really thought of, where I could, with some tunes, because I've played that tune so many times, the finger work actually can go to the background and I can focus on steady blowing, right? Exactly. I can bring something else up to the fore and focus on that. And that might actually become Scotland the Brave. And if that's a message of hope at all, you know, that like Scotland the Brave might be the challenge right now. Scotland the Brave will become so familiar that you could do it in your sleep.
That's right.
Then you'll be able to focus on these other aspects while you're playing Scotland the Brave. And won't that be a cool thing to look back on this time right now and go, this used to be really hard for me for these reasons. And now those things are easy for me and that feels good.
That's right. Yep. And that's what practice is all about. And that's what experience is all about. The question touches on some other interesting things too, and talking about how to think about this and how they should structure their practice to achieve these goals. And I would really caution people to not do that. Just keep playing tunes, keep doing your best. Understand that it's not going to be super pretty the first few times, but just keep going with it. Like someone was saying, well, I guess just tons and tons of repetitions on this. And my advice would be, well, just relax. I mean, if you're in the mood to do tons of repetitions because you're fired up and that's interesting
to you.
Sometimes
you need reps, right?
Yeah. If that's what you're in the mood to do that. Right, but if you're feeling frustrated, I would say, don't do that. Don't turn it into something that you hate that makes you really upset. Like these skills will come over time. We just want to keep playing bagpipes and keep enjoying things. And maybe you're just not ready to play Scotland the Brave yet on the full pipes. Man, I can remember, there's lots of tunes like that. Cameronian Rant is a perfect tune like that. I'm about to go off on a tangent, but the Cameronian Rant is a perfect example. In the days where I used to have a heaping pile of crap D-throw, I think we've discussed this before on the podcast, the difference between a proper D-throw.
We don't talk about those days.
But in the days where I used to play a quote-unquote heavy D-throw, and the reason I do that in quotes is because 9 out of 10 times when someone says they play the heavy D-throw, they're actually playing the steaming pile D-throw where nothing is actually controlled and it's just a hot mess. And by the way, I can say that because that used to be me for years and years. And it's a long story, but eventually I decided I had to pick a certain specific method of playing the D-throw and do it. And I wisely picked the light D-throw. It was back in the Oren Moore days where we had to figure out how we were going to get the D-throws in the band to sound in unison. So it's like, well, I guess it's going to start with me learning how to actually play a D-throw, something I can do consistently and teach others to do. But anyway, up until that point, Cameronian Rant was going to be a hot mess because there's a billion high-speed D-throws in there. And no matter what you did, Cameronian Rant wasn't going to sound good. So at that stage, I could have just played Cameronian Rant and done tons and tons of reps. But interestingly, I just probably wasn't ready for that tune yet. And then now Cameronian Rant is like no big deal, because since then the D throw has become something that I play, at least, again, not pleading perfection here, but it's something that I play well and it's something I do easily and I do it without having to think about it. So now Cameronian Rant's no big deal. The hardest part about it is just trying to remember what order the parts come in, but it's like no longer a really big thing, but I have the infrastructure to be able to do that now. So maybe trying to get Scotland the Brave on the pipes, that's probably just something that 3 months from now, you'll be doing it no big deal. And it'll probably be because of other things that you've done that contribute to that skill set, that specific skill set. Yeah.
I feel like I'm getting like enjoy the journey vibes from some of this advice.
You want to enjoy it, but just do the journey. Just do the journey. The journey is not get Scotland the Brave up on the pipes. Like when you started playing bagpipes, I guarantee you that's not specifically what you were thinking about. Mm. What you were thinking about, and we've talked about this before, but what you were thinking about is being able to play great music on the bagpipes and to be able to express yourself and to be able to do powerful things. It wasn't like, maybe it was, but I would challenge that view and with the idea that maybe we can do better than this. But it's not about being able to play Scotland the Brave on the pipes, folks. We're going to be able to do that, but hopefully we'll be able to play anything. Hopefully it'll be a universal thing that we can use to play anything we want. For example, I was like, my daughter's been playing bagpipes a little bit, and I just had the thought that if I could write out some Taylor Swift songs on the practice chanter, but she'd get a real kick out of that. You know what I mean? So now I'm in the unfortunate position of having to listen to some Taylor Swift songs.
How dare you?
Yeah, it's terrible. But maybe that's an antiquated viewpoint. But anyway, Jim, I think you understand where I'm going with that. There's a lot there. So yeah, enjoy the journey, man. Enjoy it, but also just do it. Like, I don't think the entire journey is enjoyable. There's always going to be little thick areas where you get stuck. But yeah, just do the journey. If you get stuck on Scott and the Brave, I think I can see where maybe that's an important one, because maybe that's part of the person's test to join the band, or maybe that's just like the one of those really important tunes that you really want to get.
Common marches and parades, it's going to come up. I'm sure they'd want to be able to join in on that kind of stuff, of course.
Yeah, what are the tunes in between those super easy slow airs that the person said they could do versus Scott and the Brave, which, by the way, is a very, of all the common 4-4 marches, it might be one of the most difficult, right?
It's so interesting. It's so foundational, but when you stop and think about it, like, that's a surprisingly difficult tune that we put on people pretty early.
Of course. Yeah, it's not difficult until you add all the embellishments in, which most people do radically prematurely. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, we digress. Thank you for that mailbag question. I think there's a lot there. I also think that if you listen back through some of our other episodes, I think we talked a lot about it in that we're really talking about the meeting of the waters there between
When the basics of finger.
Yeah. Rubber hitting the road. Yeah. There you go. And good question.
Yes. And thank you for writing in. I want to be super clear. Like, we really appreciate this. Anybody who's listening, who's thinking, I want to write in, go ahead. I'll be fine.
Yeah. It gives
especially
us
if it's nice stuff.
Yeah. It gives us a fresh look at some of the stuff. And also some of the stuff we just talked about there is a great review, which we might not have done if it weren't for people writing in. Mm-hmm. All right. What's next?
Okay. I've got one to read to you here. Okay.
I think I see it in front of me. It's kind of like a novel.
Yeah. A little on the longer side. Hey, Andrew. Exclamation points X3. Hey, Andrew, feel free to pause me at any point during this, Andrew, because maybe that's the best way actually is to address some of the things
long.
As they come up.
Yep, yeah, this is long.
So I'll read and you just stop me whenever you'd like.
Most of it's very nice, though. Most of it's very nice. So we should I'm going to
back up just a little bit and read once again. I'm a huge fan of the podcast and in love with your objective approach.
Yeah, huge is in all caps. So is the word love. All right, keep it going.
We started the day by bemoaning the fact that the next cold we get will probably do us in. It's nice to have a little positivity to carry on. I don't know where I would be without your resources online. I'm a relatively new piper, only been playing for 7 months and already playing in a grade 4 band. Hey, that is impressive. Good job. It helps that I used to be a high-level competitive dancer, having already ingrained some musical awareness and sensitivity to rhythm, tone, and melodic patterns. However, that can only take me so far, and I am yearning to improve as an individual piper for both competition and event purposes. Understandable.
Yes. You want to pause there?
Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
I get kind of wary of this, just, you know, to make sure I insult someone who's a huge fan of the podcast and loves it. No, I'm not insulting anyone. I'm
good,
anyone,
Andrew.
I get
the universe
kind of wary
gives you
of
a gift and you throw it out the window.
Yeah, I used to be a high-level competitive dancer and I've already ingrained musical awareness and sensitivity to rhythm and tone and log pattern. Okay, I get it, totally. But really, this is simple. You've been immersed in bagpipe music and culture for a long time already. That's all it is.
There's that immersion thing, yeah.
Yeah, and by the way, the fact that it's bagpipe music and culture, that's helpful, but you could come at this from a jazz angle too, or you could come at this as a filmmaker, right? So you've been thinking about narrative and aesthetic and timelines and artistic control and the importance of intention, right? So there's all different types of immersion. And so like, only been playing for 7 months and already playing in the grade 4 band. Okay, cool. But like, again, it's an enjoy the journey thing here as well, in the sense that it's not necessarily what grade level you're in after 7 months is not the key metric here. And what we want to do is just keep enjoying things and don't rush it and soak everything in and be diverse, because we don't want to just go super far, super fast just because of coincidence and miss out on some of the important stuff along the way. So Just a couple little things there in that first paragraph. I just wanted to root.
You absolutely do sound like an old man right now, being like, slow down, youngster. Enjoy your time.
Yes. But also, it probably is because of all the time you spent in the Highland dancing, and you're familiar with how things are going to go and what the music's going to sound like and what a good bagpiper sounds like. And you're already familiar with that. So, man, that helps a lot, doesn't it? That's the first commandment of mastery, so to speak, right? Is that immersion.
Immersion.
So, all that word salad aside, yeah. Immersion is a powerful, immersion's a hell of a drug.
Right. So they go on to say, like you, I am incredibly OCD about the technique side of playing, and I want it to be perfect.
I'm insulted
and to
by
master
this.
The fundamentals.
I'm insulted by this, and I am not OCD about the technique side of playing.
I think I could understand. I think I believe you, but I think I can understand where somebody's coming from saying that because of like this. When I read that, I think to myself, like, well, this might be that dojo focus on get the fundamentals down right. And then move on. Don't go rushing past the fundamentals, like have sloppy throws or something and just like keep doing them sloppy and think you're ready for something else, right? Like focus on the thing, get the thing, and then build like block by block.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, fine. But also I'm not OCD about it at all. I miss technique all the time. And probably part of the reason I'm not a better super famous player is I honestly could care less. So I'm not really interested in perfection at all when I play, typically.
I believe you. I believe you. But I also, I like to laugh to myself whenever I hear it. Obsessive compulsive disorder is what the OCD stands for. And I don't want to make light of people who genuinely suffer with the disorder, but it's like when somebody has a disorder and says, I don't have that disorder, you know?
Yeah.
There's a joke to be made there somewhere, right?
Maybe, well, I don't know. Maybe.
So then they go on to say, this has only just been the case after having a wake-up call from listening to your podcast, in which for maybe 3 months now, I have been tuning in religiously every day. Confirmation that Piper's Dojo is a cult. Religiously, she says.
Yes. So,
there you go.
There it is.
Here's my dilemma, again. I can only go so far with individual learning and correcting myself. I really need that outsider perspective. In one podcast, I think you said that good piping is like 15% knowledge and 85% practice, or something like that. And I definitely have probably 50-50 listening to your podcast / playing. Which, by the way, usually equates to 2 hours of each day. That's kudos
great.
To you for putting out enough stuff that somebody can listen to that much daily. But the practical process I feel to keep up my heaving head of dojo knowledge would be sped up with outsider critique to pick up things that I can't pick up on. I am too new in my piping journey to identify every little note/rhythm discrepancy. But I know that they're there for sure. I definitely know there are bad technique blips lurking in the deep waters of my technique, like the scary jaws, the shark, right? I'm just waiting for it to jump out at me. The thing with moving so fast is that people aren't harsh enough on my playing. I want to be critiqued. I want harsh feedback. I want the attitude of, no matter how well you think I'm doing, I've got heaps to work on. I want to go home every week with a good list of things to work through and perfect. I want to express myself and become my own unique musician, but before that, I need to work on my own critique in my own solo piping. My band is more of a social band, which is okay, but I guess I'd love to maybe step things up more. Piper's Dojo is perfect for that, but there is the biggest issue here. My time zone makes it so hard to attend live classes.
New Zealand's a tough one.
Yes. And she says it's just that. New Zealand time is pretty much the polar opposite to Eastern Standard Time. I would like to put my money towards dojo, but I feel like I can't reap all the benefits. Upside down, sad face, crazy face, upside down.
Yeah, I think that's
I've got
what
the text
is.
Translation of an emoji here, so I'm not sure exactly which emoji is being used there.
Cheers to you, old man Jim.
Right, yeah. I'd love to attend all the online classes / get feedback / ask questions in the online classes. Also, this is funny, but I still live with my parents. I have to abide by rules of no Wi-Fi after 10:30 p.m. As a parent, I'm like, that's a pretty cool rule. I'm into that. It shuts off. It's reasonable, I suppose. Then it's back on at 5 a.m., so no classes between those hours, obviously. Anyway, if you have made it this far into the email, I am really grateful for your time.
Oh, we've made it this far. We've made it this far live on air.
Yeah, we've all made it this far. Let's see. I'm honestly such a huge fan.
No, the that's way you not explain what it says. I'm honestly such a huge fan.
You're right. I shouldn't skip over that part.
Yeah,
we need every
part.
Little bit of that.
It's the best part of the whole email.
Yeah. The way you explain things and use analogies and literary devices to communicate your points is so refreshing. Once again, I am absolutely a dojo worshiper, lol. It is my religion. Cheers. An avid listener of the Dojo podcast.
Cool. Well, there's a lot in there. I think some things that jump out at me are that she wants to be critiqued and wants feedback. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. What a good attitude to have, right? I wondered though, Andrew, do you think maybe, and I'm not necessarily trying to drive you to introspection, but do you think maybe some of your sort of initial kind of feelings of slow down there, whippersnapper, do you think that might be coming from a place of having been this kind of learner yourself and maybe having encountered some of the negative repercussions that can come from like drive, drive, drive? Are you at a point in your life now where you're like, oh, actually step back and maybe don't, I don't know. Is there a balancing act to be done here? And are you feeling like
you're
putting up warning signs?
I'm not sure I was this type of learner. When I learned, I was like 8. I don't think you have too many thoughts one way or the other during those, but I feel like I've seen this a lot. Like, I think the risk of burning out is always there, and that would be a shame if we burned out. A couple of things that jump off the page at me here. New Zealand is a great place to play bagpipes. There's so much really good piping in New Zealand. So I'm thinking this person must be able to find a mentor there somewhere who would be happy to help in your own time zone, in person. I would think there must be some really good players there. And you could do that. You could go outside of your band for that advice. And that doesn't mean you can't play in your band or anything like that. It would just be like you had a private teacher. I think one of the reasons I've been so successful is I had great teachers. My dad was a great player, but then he was also wise enough to make sure that I took lots of lessons with people like Donald Lindsay. And then via Donald, I met a lot of other great players like Jim McGilvery and Jack Lee and Norman and Alistair Gillis and all that stuff. Yeah.
Go on.
Would you like me to continue the list?
Yeah.
No, but that kind of stuff really helps. It keeps you fired up, keeps you interested, and helps keep all these things in perspective. So if the dojo is not going to work for you, which by the way, that's a shame, but New Zealand really is tough. Some of the Australian time zones were gradually getting a little bit better at trying to overlap stuff with that, but New Zealand's a tricky one.
Even further that way. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like really, I don't know. I mean, we'll figure something out eventually, but there's lots of really great players in New Zealand. And one of the things about what we're doing at the dojo is it's mutually inclusive of all other learning and teaching styles. I think there'll be, maybe all other good teaching styles. I think the bad teaching styles, I think you'll be able to identify those pretty easily. But yeah, find some good players and ask them what they think.
And it'll jive with the dojo content that she is religiously consuming.
Yep. And I think if that's a difficult thing to do, if it's not easy to get to that person for a lesson every week, I think that's fine. Then you'll practice hard on your own in, let's say, the month between lessons or something like that. And then you'll be able to get more criticism and more feedback. And then you'll really be on your own to figure out things and to make things work, it'll all contribute to being a really good player. So that's
and
what you should
do. And this person obviously has that kind of drive, which I sure admire. And I remember having that kind of energy. So like on the theme of being an old man, right? And like looking back and talking back, it does occur to me that like I'm all for it in terms of this person clearly expressing a lot of desire and a lot of fire and drive to like really improve right now. Partly because I look at this whole thing like on the cusp of deep adulthood, living at home, like this is a window that might be really narrow when there is like time for really deeply focusing on piping. Just thinking about my own life and thinking like that might be a couple years that you got in this kind of situation. And in a couple of years, you might have a lot of complicating factors that get in the way where that desire might be there, but there might be way fewer opportunities to practice, to improve, etc. And so while this iron is so hot, I'm like, yeah, strike, you know, learn.
I think New Zealand
I ran out
is
of things
probably,
to say, sorry.
Well, yeah, I was like, I better help him out here. New Zealand is probably, if you live there, I'm assuming it's feeling a little bit isolating. It's like this island.
One might imagine. Yeah.
I mean, as I'm picturing it, I'm feeling very isolating effects.
That is one thing. We're both speaking from like this giant landmass. We're maybe making some assumptions about New Zealand, but it feels that way from over here. It probably feels a little bit that way, yeah.
But with all that said, Jim, it's also a great hotbed of piping. So you're actually in a good position here. There's some really good piping and stuff going on there. You just got to figure out how to connect with some of these folks.
Yeah. I really appreciate, and maybe this is partly me feeling self-conscious having run bands in the past, but I really appreciate that they do point out that like their band environment is more band focused and they understand that, and that it's maybe a bit of a social band, and that's good. Because I have had the experience, I can think of a few maybe similar students/band members that I've seen that like it's hard because like I understand their drive and what they want. But as one of the leaders of a band that has to think about all the people who are there, these young and enthusiastic people come in to that kind of environment and you want to help them, but you only have so much time in the evening, et cetera. And so it's not that I feel upset with them for wanting more. It's that I can only do so much. And sometimes they bounce out and go elsewhere. And if they go elsewhere because they can get that precise instruction that they need, that's good. What makes me feel sad or kind of culpable is when they go elsewhere to pursue something else that's not bagpiping because they weren't getting what they needed when they came to my group. I feel some sense of responsibility for that.
Yeah.
And I don't know. So I appreciate that they are recognizing here that there is band focus. There is a social aspect there and that's its own thing and that's good. But what I want is this like individual improvement, and they're going out and looking for ways to find that. That's great.
Yep. All that stuff makes a lot of sense. Let's leave it there for today, Jim. Thanks for 3 really good mailbags there.
Yeah. Good friends. Write in some more.
Hey, everybody. Andrew Douglas here from the Piper's Dojo. And I just want to say thanks so much for listening to today's iteration of the podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard here today, it would be super helpful to us and to a lot of bagpipers out there trying to find us if you could give us a top-notch review on whatever platform you're using to listen to this podcast, particularly Apple, iTunes, and Spotify and things like that. Your review would be really, really helpful. So if you have a moment today, definitely go over there and help us out. Other than that, until we meet again on the podcast or somewhere else, thanks again for listening.